America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to GEICO.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Zoo officials say they'd do it again. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka, on this Tuesday, May 31st. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
The director of the Cincinnati Zoo, under fire from animal rights activists, says his team had to shoot and kill a gorilla because it was a danger to a little boy who had fallen into the enclosure.
Deadly flooding across Texas, and there's no rest for the weary. More heavy rain is in the forecast.
Airlines are at it again. Hear how their thirst for fees is making it difficult for families to sit together.
And is going to college worth it for low-income students? There are troubling new findings.
You know, for decades now, we've had one message for students, particularly low-income students, which is the way to get ahead and the way to climb a few rungs on the economic ladder reliably is to go to college. But there is a big gap in information and certainly in financing and in completion rate.
Neil Swidey, writing in Boston Globe magazine, looks at how low-income students are taking on debt but not getting diplomas. He's here in about 25 minutes. Officials at the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden are standing behind their decision to kill a 400-pound gorilla after a 4-year-old boy fell into the animal's enclosure, saying the child was in danger. After the boy slipped into the area that houses the primates, the zoo's gorilla trainers gave the animals a special signal that calls them back inside. Zoo director Thane Maynard said while the female gorillas responded, the silverback gorilla named Harambe was distracted by the events and did not respond.
Well, who questioned that? Or our Monday morning quarterbacks or second guessers don't understand that you can't take a risk with a silverback gorilla.
Video shows the gorilla dragging around the boy whose head was hitting the concrete ground. Meanwhile, animal rights activists like Tony Seda were expressing outrage over the killing of the 17-year-old gorilla.
If this person was a sports figure, if this person was an important political figure, and they were shot in the city, we'd have outpouring for that person as well. Why should it be any different if it's one of our lowland gorillas?
Separately, by the way, Mr. Maynard, the zoo director, told a story of seeing Harambe crush a coconut with one hand. In detailing the primate's massive structure, he said Harambe's arms were similar to the legs of a human being. Cincinnati police, by the way, say there are no plans to charge the boy's parents. Deadly weekend from flooding thanks to torrential rain across large areas of Texas. Record-breaking rain since the middle of last week has swamped and overturned cars, damaged houses, even led to the evacuation of 2,600 inmates at one facility. That rain was on top of areas already walloped by other recent storms. Since Wednesday, the thunderstorms have dropped pockets of intensely heavy rain, or rain bombs, as they're called by some meteorologists. Freddie Newsom is the mayor of Thompson's, a city outside Houston.
I've been going out all day long checking on the residents and making sure that some of them in the areas that they are in, that they get out.
The rain has circulated through East Texas, Dallas, and Corpus Christi, along with Austin and San Antonio, hitting some parts harder than others. As a result, rainfall has ranged from 4 inches in parts of the Dallas-Fort Worth area to 30 inches in Washington County, which is between Austin and Houston. The Brazos River, which empties into the Gulf of Mexico, is expected to reach historic flood levels. Meanwhile, another 8 to 10 inches in the forecast from tomorrow through Friday in central and southeastern Texas. Overseas now, South Korea's military says North Korea suffered a failed attempt at a missile launch earlier today. The Yonhap news agency in Seoul says the missile was a mid-range Musudan. If true, that would be the fourth such failure. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
The concern here is that the Musudan missile has a range of about 2,100 miles, which means it could potentially reach faraway U.S. military bases in Asia and the Pacific, like the ones in Guam. Despite recent failures, the Wall Street Journal says that there's been a growing outside worry over North Korea's nuclear and missile activity this year, which includes a nuclear test in January and a long-range rocket test in February. South Korea believes that the North doesn't yet possess a missile capable of hitting the U.S. mainland, but the North is working on it. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. 11 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
You're a small to mid-sized business with 300 to 3,000 employees. You face the same network security challenges as big businesses do, but can't support a big IT investment, leaving your doors open to advanced cyber threats. Barracuda Next Generation Firewalls provide all the core features of enterprise firewalls and UTMs, but without hidden costs and deployment hurdles, making owning a big business firewall no big deal for your SMB. Reclaim your network. Try a Barracuda Next Gen Firewall risk-free at barracuda.com/firewalls.
You appreciate the feeling of a clean, smooth shave from a quality blade. So why are you messing around with generic razors that cost $32 for an 8-pack when you can shave with Harry's high-quality German-engineered blades for half the price? Harry's will give you their starter set, complete with a razor, three of their world-famous blades, and shaving cream for just $15. And shipping is always free. We'll also give you $5 off your first order. So go to harrys.com right now and enter code 8866 at checkout. Code 8866.
Thanks for spending time with us. White nationalists are applauding Donald Trump's elevation to Republican presidential nominee while also trying to boost their own political profiles and activity. Although Mr. Trump has spurned their support, he's being cheered by these groups for his proposals to, say, temporarily bar Muslim immigrants, deport millions of people living here illegally, and build a wall along the border with Mexico. It's a story from Wall Street Journal reporter Beth Reinhard. Beth, what do we have?
Obviously, Donald Trump and some of these extreme people on the right are not in lockstep, but the policies that Trump has outlined and the rhetoric he's used in talking about immigration, these groups see as sort of paving the way, as you know, as a first step. He is saying things out loud that they have thought for years, and that politicians in the past have not, you know, said. And you know, his policies of deporting all the folks who are living here illegally, building a wall, keeping Muslim immigrants out, these are all things that they support and, of course, would go further than Trump, but they see him as a good first step, and they like his willingness to say things, quote-unquote, politically incorrect things, regardless of the backlash.
Mm. All right.
Which is something they've been doing for years. You know, they say things that most of us consider very offensive and, you know, then have to deal with the consequences. And they've watched Trump do that and rise to the top.
On the other side of the political aisle, do you write, too, that even Hillary Clinton gets support from a KKK leader or something like that?
Yeah, there was a KKK leader that months ago had tweeted support for Trump and then more recently said he wanted Clinton to win, which was, you know, curious. And, you know, there are sporadic examples of these groups backing other candidates. Ted Cruz got money from a white supremacist as well. But most of their interest and their, you know, has been directed at Trump.
And to be clear, nobody's actually courting these groups, right?
You know, Trump has said he disavows white supremacists. He's disavowed specifically David Duke, the former Ku Klux Klan leader. But at the same time, you know, the civil rights groups who monitor these kind of things say he has sent encouraging signs to in terms of his immigration policy, but also more subtle signs by, you know, retweeting white supremacists on Twitter, saying things, connecting immigrants to crime in misleading ways, things like that, that sort of send a message to these folks on the radical right that, hey, I'm a little bit on your side, even though when I am asked, I'm going to say I'm not on your side. So they feel a little bit of encouragement from Trump.
I was surprised, I guess, and maybe not surprised at this one statement from this Holocaust denier that you quoted, who said,
yep.
white men in America and across the planet are partying like it's 1999 following Trump's decisive victory over the evil enemies of our race.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
The rhetoric is pretty stunning. And if you go to these websites and listen to these radio shows, there's a lot of talk about Donald Trump.
Thanks, Beth. Wall Street Journal reporter Beth Reinhardt. It's 18 minutes now after the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
According to residents of some rural southeast Texas counties are bracing for more flooding along a river that's expected to crest at a record level just 2 years after it had run dry in places because of drought. National Weather Service meteorologists predict the Brazos River will crest at 53.5 feet by midday today in Fort Bend County, 3 feet above the previous record. Rosenberg resident Barbara Leach says she doesn't want to evacuate.
We've never seen it this high, Of course, everybody thinks I'm crazy for not leaving.
During 4 days of torrential rain, 6 people have died. The UN says at least 880 migrants and refugees died trying to cross the Mediterranean last week, giving updated figures after interviewing survivors brought to Italy. The UN says this year is proving to be particularly deadly, with 2,510 lives already lost in shipwrecks and capsizing in just 5 months. South Korea's military says a North Korean missile launch likely failed today, the latest in a string of high-profile failures that somewhat tempers recent worries that Pyongyang was pushing quickly toward its goal of a nuclear-tipped missile that can reach America's mainland. Sources say the missile exploded at a mobile launch pad as soon as the launch button was pressed. Iraqi forces battling their way into Fallujah have repelled a 4-hour attack by the Islamic State group in the city's south. Two officers with the special forces say the attack started at dawn today in an area where Iraqi troops captured almost 85% of the ground the previous day when they first entered Fallujah. Striking Verizon employees will be back to work tomorrow after the company and its unions finally reached an agreement in principle on a 4-year contract. Two unions representing more than 36,000 workers won concessions from Verizon, including a nearly 11% raise, a small pump in pension benefits, and a promise to add 1,400 new union jobs. The agreement ends a 7-week strike. And game one of the Stanley Cup Finals goes to the Penguins. Pittsburgh topped San Jose last night 3-2. Game two is tomorrow night in Pittsburgh.
And with basketball, by the way, I'm still trying to figure out how the Golden State Warriors pulled that off against OKC.
Down 3-1.
They were done.
And they got killed in those couple of games there.
Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't even close.
And then all of a sudden, Klay Thompson happened in game six.
Yes.
I think he had 230 points. It's 22 minutes now after the hour on this morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Make Michigan your number one choice for business. Airlines are working hard to soak us for as much money from fees as possible. Another way they're doing it, nailing parents with small children trying to sit together on a plane. Airlines have expanded extra legroom seating on planes and labeled more plane coach seats as preferred, leaving fewer seats to reserve in advance without fees. More from Wall Street Journal airline writer Scott McCartney. Scott, what's up here?
Well, this has been going on for a while. I think it's gotten worse because airlines have put more seats into extra legroom configurations and blocked more seats from regular old travelers. So families look at seat maps and when they go to buy tickets, and they can't find seats together that they can reserve for free. So they feel pressured into paying fees for seats just to assure themselves that they'll be able to sit with their children.
Mm. And the airlines care very little about this?
Well, hard to gauge. I would say it's fair to say the airlines care more about their frequent flyers and their elite-level customers for whom they're blocking seats.
Okay.
The real question is whether they are fairly blocking seats for those folks or whether they're being overly aggressive at taking free seats out of circulation in order to pressure other people into buying seats. One little snapshot at an American flight from Paris to Charlotte looked at for this summer. It's a July 16th departure. About 30% of the coach seats are still available. But non-elite customers actually see only half of the seats that are empty, and the only ones that they see are the ones that require fees. So there are free seats available. They're just blocked from normal customers.
Wow. So which airlines are doing it? Is it all of them?
Yeah, one way or another. I think it's fair to say all of them. Some airlines have gone to situations where you can only book a seat in advance. It reserve a seat in advance if you pay a fee. So the ultra low cost guys, Frontier, Allegiant, Spirit, they do that. A lot of international airlines are doing that. British Airways was doing that. I talked to a family, a large family, 27 people going to Kenya on British Airways this summer from different cities in the U.S. Through London and on to Nairobi. So for British Air flight, they have 9 children under 10 years of age. To actually book seats in advance for all of those kids would be more than $6,000. You can imagine a family of 4 would be about $800, but the $6,000 is sort of an extreme case. But it illustrates that these fees are a lot more than peanuts.
Yeah. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal airline writer Scott McCartney. His piece is called "The Airline Fee to Sit with Your Family." At least Frontier is up front with it, right? They're pretty much, you want to sit together, pay a fee.
Well, yeah, they are. And it's interesting. The Senate legislation takes that into account where they say, well, if you do charge fees, what you have to do is make your lowest fee available to families. But you book a ticket on Frontier, and you got to know. Now, people may not always know.
Thanks, Scott. Wall Street Journal airline writer Scott McCartney, who's based in Dallas. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
A great business needs a stunning website. And with Wix.com, you can do it all by yourself. Wix.com makes it easy to look amazing online, no matter what type of business you're in. Show off your images in a beautiful gallery. Grow your contact list and get all your social media in one place, just the way you want. Your customers are going to love it. So, what are you waiting for? Show the world what you can do. Go to Wix.com and create your stunning website today. It's easy and free.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Glad you're with us. It is Tuesday, May 31st. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Cincinnati Zoo officials say they'd make the same decision again to kill a gorilla if a human life were in danger. Deadly Texas flooding over the weekend. Hillary cancels a New Jersey event because she needs more time in California. Senate hearing today on failures at the VA. Golden State knocks out OKC. A Cincinnati man, are you kidding me, facing charges after he dropped his pants and went to the bathroom on a supermarket scanner. And this was not public urination, by the way. And where rain does not stop a Memorial Day parade. That story in about 20 minutes. A 4-year diploma is supposed to be their ticket out of poverty. But low-income students are instead finding themselves saddled with huge student loans and often no degree to show for it. Neil Swidey in Boston Globe magazine talks about how during college graduation season, there are questions about the worth of higher education. Neil, what did you look at?
So one of the things I tried to do was to look under the hood for this massive college debt issue, the $1.23 trillion college debt crisis, and look at, I think, what's been a really overlooked dimension to this, which is the number of low-income students who are starting college and not finishing. And those scary stats really overlook those students and just the high number of them who are starting and not finishing in worse shape than if they'd never gone to college at all. I think we really need to look more closely at what's happening there on the ground.
Interesting. All right, so why is this happening, do we know?
Yeah, I think it's, for decades now, we've had one message for students, particularly low-income students, which is the way to get ahead and the way to climb a few rungs on the economic ladder reliably is to go to college and to go to a 4-year college and get a degree there. And so that sort of culture of aspiration around college is in the ether. Students know it, they hear it from a young age, and they're kind of tracked along that way to go there. But there is a big gap in information and certainly in financing and in completion rates that all complicate that picture and make that culture of aspiration much less encouraging when you actually see what's happening.
Give us some of the numbers surrounding this with regards to low-income students not finishing.
A big issue is the numbers, and the numbers, the financial squeeze that comes right out of the gate. And so what I was looking at were small private colleges that don't have the endowments of Harvard and the Ivy League colleges, who can traditionally meet the need of students coming in who don't have much income. And I looked specifically at the lowest end of the economic income. So these are students coming from families making $30,000 a year or less as the total family income, and then looked at the gap that students are being asked to cover, pay out of pocket or taking out in loans each year at colleges that accept a lot of low-income students. And the numbers are kind of staggering. When you look at colleges, particularly in parts of the country like the Northeast, where there's a lot of private colleges and college is more expensive than it is in other parts of the country, these students are being asked, on average, to use almost all of that family income, that $30,000 a year of family income, to cover the gap.
We're speaking with Neil Swidey, Boston Globe, staff writer for the Sunday Magazine. We're talking about his piece entitled, Is It Worth Going to College for Low-Income Students? You point out, too, already average student loan debt is higher in Boston than any other metro area in the country, 44% above the national average. And that's an area just rich with, like, excellent schools.
Exactly, yeah. And those figures are pretty stunning when you look at them. And the national average is around $30,000 of debt that the students are carrying. And in the $44,000 or so on average here in the Boston metro area, kind of quite a bit higher than everywhere else. And so I started to look at why that's happening. And in parts of the country where students generally, when two things have happened, one is where they have a kind of don't have as many private colleges, they tend to have invested more over generations in the public college system. The state flagship universities and the state colleges around them. And so there are fewer options generally for students going, and those students tend to rack up less debt than they do elsewhere where there's lots of private colleges.
Thanks, Neil. Neil Swidey from Boston Globe magazine. It's 20 minutes now before the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Everyone knows that business is all about numbers. Consider the numbers the state of Michigan can offer your business, like being a top 10 pro-business state, or 2,000, the number of unnecessary regulations Michigan has eliminated in the last 5 years, and 6, Michigan's rank for best entrepreneurial climate, which all adds up to the one state that has all that and more. Michigan. Go to MichiganBusiness.org to learn more. Thanks for being with us. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, tenants at a Salt Lake City apartment complex aren't giving any likes and certainly not any smiley faces to a Facebook-centric condition to their lease. Local TV reports that tenants at City Park Apartments received a notice on their doors late last week about a contractual add-on involving Facebook. According to the document, a new lease agreement mandates that residents friend the complex on Facebook within 5 days of signing or be found in violation. They don't even give you a week. 5 days. The document also has a release that permits the property to post pictures of tenants and their visitors on its Facebook page. People, as you can imagine, aren't thrilled about this and are visiting the Facebook page they are supposed to be liking to express their anger about the new policy, which could potentially get them kicked out if they don't comply. But a lawyer told KSL-TV that he does not think the policy is legal because not everyone has access to social media. And, you know, not to mention,
well, everyone has
on Facebook.
Everyone has access to it. It's whether or not somebody has an account.
Well, yeah,
I mean,
sure.
This day and age.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, again, it's most people do, but yeah, again, not everybody does. And again, to sort of force somebody, let's say you're somebody who's, you know, not big into the internet, so, whatever, you know, to force somebody to sort of level up to that is probably not something that's legal. Not to mention the biggest one, which is posting everybody's pictures and pictures of visitors.
Right.
People, not even you, but people showing up to visit you, posting that on the Facebook page, too. That's even worse, I think, than the having to like the page.
We got to look up this whoever owns these units and become tenants of them. That sounds like a lot of fun to be in their units.
Yeah. And and Alex Rodriguez, Gordon, maybe one of the most famous and infamous baseball players of the last 20 years, not to mention rich beyond our wildest dreams. But he's also a dad, and nobody can bring you back to earth quicker than your kids, no matter how rich and famous you are. Social media was buzzing over the weekend when A-Rod posted a picture of his 8-year-old daughter Ella's Parents' Day homework from school. In the assignment, she says that her dad's favorite thing to do is play baseball, of course. She says her dad looks best when he comes to school in a suit or in, quote, that Nike shirt, you know, that Nike shirt.
the one he has?
Yes, you know. When asked the best thing her dad cooks, what the best thing her dad cooks is, Ella says that A-Rod doesn't cook, and, quote, even if he did,
Oh, boy.
According to Ella, A-Rod is also really good at typing fast on his BlackBerry, and that the craziest thing he ever did was cut her an apple. She also incorrectly guessed that Rodriguez was 43 years old instead of 40, okay, which led A-Rod to tweet that by the time he actually is 43, he hopes to finally know how to cut an apple.
Mm.
So you're not going to dinner at A-Rod's house. Well, you might go and you might have a great meal, but he's not the one cooking it.
Right.
For sure.
Best recipe is when the delivery guy shows up.
Yes, delivery, or, you know, who knows? He probably has a personal chef on staff, I would guess.
Well, yeah, that's true.
You're making $25 million a year.
Making specialized meals just for an athlete.
Yes.
Right? And his healthy family who may be following in his footsteps. Very good. That's something. Very good. Thank you, Mike. 14 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you could be with us. Here's some unsettling news about painkillers. News from a research team studying the effects of opioids may help explain the explosion in prescription painkiller addictions over the last several years. A University of Colorado Boulder study has found that opioid use increases chronic pain in rats. A story in Forbes says if the same result holds true in humans, it would mean that prescribed opioids aren't only viciously addictive, they also worsen the very condition they're prescribed to treat. The study showed that just 5 days of morphine treatment in rats caused chronic pain that continued for several months by triggering the release of pain signals from immune cells in the spinal cord. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
According to the Cincinnati Zoo's director is defending the decision to kill a gorilla to protect a 4-year-old boy who entered its exhibit, noting it's easy to second guess after the child was recovered safely. The gorilla was killed Saturday by a special zoo response team that feared for the boy's safety. Animal rights activist Tony Sata says the animal could have been tranquilized.
I want people to take away remembering that a fellow Cincinnatian died.
Video taken by zoo visitors show the gorilla at times appeared to be protective of the boy, but also dragged him through the moat. At least five animal rights activists rushed the stage as presidential candidate Bernie Sanders spoke at a rally in Oakland yesterday. The protesters were led away by Secret Service agents before they were able to reach the Democrat. Former U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder says Edward Snowden performed a public service in stoking a national debate about secret domestic surveillance programs, but he added that Snowden should still return to the U.S. from Russia to stand trial. Holder spoke with CNN political commentator David Axelrod in a podcast. Poland's justice minister says he will ask a court to cancel a previous ruling that blocked the extradition of Roman Polanski to the U.S. from Poland. The minister says he believes Polanski should be handed over to the U.S. because his crime, sex with a minor, was heinous, and the filmmaker should enjoy no privileges because of his celebrity status. A court in Krakow last year blocked Polanski's extradition. Baylor athletic director Ian McCaw has resigned less than a week after he was put on probation as part of the school's reaction to a scathing report about its failure to properly respond to allegations of sexual assaults. The announcement came about an hour after Baylor hired former Wake Forest coach Jim Grobe to replace the ousted Art Briles. And Briles was fired last Thursday, and Baylor president Ken Starr was demoted. And Johnny Depp's Alice Through the Looking Glass bombed over the weekend with just $34 million, while X-Men debuted on top with $65 million. The anticipated showdown of the two big-budget films turned out to be little contest. Both films were panned by critics, and neither drew the audience many expected.
I thought maybe a few more people would go out to see Johnny Depp just because this dust-up he's in with his divorce.
That makes people go? I guess it didn't.
I don't know. Not this time, however.
No.
Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Well, rain may have canceled many Memorial Day parades across Massachusetts, but that didn't stop one group of local veterans. CBS says in Pepperell, on the New Hampshire border, a handful of service members braved the inclement weather and marched down Main Street anyway. National Guard Master Sergeant Eric Vogelsang said he and his wife put the word out about the unsanctioned march on Saturday evening after learning that the parade had been canceled for yesterday. WBZ Television says a collection of veterans, some who knew of the plan and others who did not, gathered at the Pepperell VFW where their walk began. Veteran Bob Connolly also marched to raise awareness of a monument he hopes will be built in honor of servicemen and women who have died in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. His organization, the Middlesex Global War on Terrorism, is trying to raise $100,000 for construction of the monument near the Pepperell Rotary. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.